Greetings and welcome to another episode of the Wandering One podcast, brought to you by Wandering One Studios and yours truly, your host, Link Flores. Hope you guys are having a wonderful week so far. Thank you all for tuning in to another podcast. I appreciate it. Thank you so much to people. I've been hearing people saying, hey, I shared it with so-and-so and they really liked it. I'm going to actually start putting up some of the comments that I've been getting into these podcasts, read a couple of those out loud on the podcast. It's kind of like a primer for what the Patreon episode is going to be like. There's going to be a section in the middle where I'm going to answer a couple of questions I've gotten through social media. So stick around for that. By the way, thank you for anybody who's written over to me on Patreon or who has subscribed and is just kind of just letting it ride as a way to support the podcast. Thank you very much. I really do appreciate it. It means a lot to me. And I would really like your feedback, so please, please, please step over to patreon.com/WanderingOneStudios. Links are in the show notes. And, send me a message. Just say hi. You can just literally type the word hi, and I will write back to you. And then I could read your comment on the air. Just hi. But yeah, thank you so much. That will definitely help a lot. Let's get into some stuff. Let's talk some shit. You know what I mean? This is not as wild of a podcast as it usually is. It's definitely not as politically heavy as it sometimes could be. But you know, that's not for lack of trying. So we'll just get into it. We'll get some of the sad news out of the way. Just heard this the other day while I was scrolling through social media. Rachel Lillis, the voice of Misty, Jessie, and Jigglypuff from the Pokemon series, especially the American version, has passed away at age 46 due to breast cancer and complications therein. It's a sad day for a lot of anime fans, Pokemon fans, and obviously for the friends and family of the deceased. I would say that this had a bigger impact, I think, on certain communities than others. Like, it became reported as news. And not that I don't care about Pokemon, I just was never super into it, because I think when Pokemon actually really became popular here in the United States, I was already in my mid-20s, so it kind of missed me for a lot of the early craze of Pokemon. But I've come to love the franchise as a whole, and I can certainly empathize with those folks who feel a certain amount of loss on this day. Definitely, I've seen the cartoons, I've seen the movies and whatnot, and was just a great voice actress, lent a lot of personality to those characters, and another tragic loss that we suffered just in the artistic community as a whole. So, rest in peace, Ms. Lillis. Thank you very much for all you've done for Pokemon and for, you know, creative people everywhere. Thank you, thank you, thank you. So that was a little sad to start this off, but I wanted to try to get some of the sadder stuff out of the way first up. So those of you who know me or have been listening to the podcast for any amount of time know that I have had I've had gastrointestinal issues for a while. Mostly it's a lactose and gluten allergy that I've noticed that's been a problem, and still trying to find a good solution to this is difficult at best. Now, some things have worked, some things have not. Obviously, cutting out those items from your diet is the first step, right? Like, if it hurts your stomach, don't eat it. And then finding alternatives to the things that you love, the things that you miss. Doing a lot of gluten-free baking lately. In fact, I actually made some banana bread muffins and, like, little mini loaves, one of which I'm going to devour here shortly, because it is currently 9:55 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on Wednesday, August 14th, and it definitely is breakfast 30 because I'm hungry. But I made some banana bread muffins. Those are always fun for me because it's a super easy bake. This particular batch came out wonderfully. I was really excited about them. They tasted pretty good, and I think that's one of the things that I miss the most, is just being able to eat bread. I think I could probably deal without the cheese so much. I've always loved cheese, you know, but at the same time, if I had to pick one or the other to give up, it would definitely be cheese. I think I could live without eating more cheese the rest of my life. I gotta have bread at some point. And the hardest thing for me is finding anything, especially gluten-free, that doesn't taste like it was, you know, mixed with concrete, or at least doesn't have that consistency. A lot of gluten-free breads have the consistency of a brick. It's not a joke. It's just a fact. Like, they're just super dense, mostly because they're made with a rice flour blend, and that rice flour tends to absorb a lot of water really well, and it also cooks up very stiff. And that's kind of the issue that I have with a lot of those flours and whatnot. So I've been using this one particular brand, King Arthur's, and it's good stuff. Still a little dense, so I've been trying to find ways to cut it with other, you know, obviously gluten-free grain or flour sources. I haven't quite found the perfect blend yet, and when I do, I'll let you guys know. But one thing I got recently was that in the mail, I got this thing about whole body care for you if you have gastrointestinal issues. And I think this really came because, you know, I went once to a particular specialist, they say. I always call them the hat people because their name sounds like an old school haberdashery. And they did nothing. They took a lot of money. They did that. And then they, you know, stuck a tube down my throat and took pictures, and then they were like, yeah, we don't know why your stomach hurts. Take these pills and get the fuck out of our office, basically. Offered me no help, no real solutions. And then when I told them, hey, the medicine you guys gave me, which is what they call a proton pump inhibitor, it stops the little, basically it's a little pump in your stomach from producing stomach acid. It shuts it down so that your body can settle down. You don't have like the acid reflux or the diarrhea or the horrible side effects that can happen when you have GI issues. They said I took those for, I think it was a couple of days, and was taking them on schedule as I'm supposed to every day. And then lo and behold, one day it just cranked up, like it turned up the volume on those proton pump in my stomach. And I was producing like sheer stomach acid to the point where I'm like, I'm worried that, like, you know, it's obviously your stomach's trying to get rid of it. So it's going to come up one way or out the other. And at this point, I'm worried, like, you know, with all the stomach acid coming up, I'm going to erode my teeth away. You know, the enamel in your teeth can get really fucked up when you have gastrointestinal issues. Or, you know, if, like, especially if you have too much acid, like if you have a lot of acid reflux, or in certain cases, when people have issues like anorexia or bulimia, or anytime they like purge a lot and vomit a lot, that stomach acid going across your teeth can eat the enamel of your teeth away and really ruin your oral health. I'm like, this stuff is, you know, this medicine you give me, omeprazole, basically it's like Nexium or whatever, or Zantac. And you're just taking this like two or three times a day to kind of keep this acid down. And it wasn't working. It was actually counteracting. It was going the opposite direction. My stomach was making even more acid. So I called the doc and I'm like, hey, what's going on? I'm taking this stuff and it's just getting worse. And they're like, yeah, that happens sometimes. I'm like, are you fucking serious? All the money we just paid to go and have you guys put me to sleep, stick a camera down my throat and all this bullshit, only for you to tell me, like, yeah, the treatment we're going to give you, it sometimes backfires. And not like one in every, you know, 100 cases, like a lot. It's like it's basically got like a 40-something% success ratio or something like that. I'm like, so this barely works? Like, oh yeah, like a lot of times people will take the medication for a while and then their stomach will just counteract it and just produce even more acid. So then we tell them to stop taking the medicine for a while. And then it basically means you're not getting the benefit of the medication, right? Which is designed to keep the stomach acid down. You basically suffer for a while until your stomach slowly settles back down to a reasonable amount of stomach acid. Then you take the medication to kill it all off again. I'm like, this is ridiculous. There's no way this is healthy. There's no way. It's called medical practice, like a doctor's practice, you know what I mean? For a reason, because they don't know shit. And now I get this letter saying, oh, we have whole body care for you. And I'm like, yeah, GI providers, registered providers. Right? Dietitians and gut brain specialists who are working to get you lasting relief. Word. Where the fuck was this shit like 2 years ago? Don't tell me they just now figured this out, right? And then there's another one. It was a, there's a, there's, this is their review, right? They want you to get you to buy this shit. Because they're going to actually, I know they're going to charge it up into your plan. It was amazing to finally see a healthcare provider that listened and came up with real solutions to issues I've been having for years. Quote, OSHI, which is the name of this place, or OSHI, whatever. Health patient treated for GERD. Like, what? You could at least put like a photo of this chick in here or something, or person, whoever it was. That no, it's just random quote praising this healthcare plan from no named person treated for the most basic bitch disease that you can have when it comes to GI. I'm not knocking the the ailment, but at the same time, this sounds somebody wrote that shit. Nobody said that. Somebody cooked that shit up. I 100% believe that. And I know that there's got to be actual working therapies out there for this kind of shit. One of the easiest things for me has been just basically, like I said, cutting certain items out of my diet, which is unfortunate, but you got to do what you got to do, right? I'd rather not eat something than bleed from my ass a couple of days a week. I know that sounds gross, but I mean, shit happens, right? Haha, no pun intended, but kind of. I think it's just weird that there's like almost no real answers for this kind of stuff in modern medicine. Like, this, it'd be one thing if this affected like maybe one in, like I said, if it was such a small percentage of the population that had these allergies, it'd be one thing. But I think it goes to like a larger cause, like, or not a cause, but like a larger problem that's systematic, right? Like, one, we know our food is poison in a lot of ways. Between pesticides that are being used on the food to genetic modifications to make seeds hardier and plants sturdier during dry seasons and to withstand bacteria, fungal infections, and pestilence, right? Those chemicals end up in your food, end up in your system, and your body wasn't meant to eat that shit. So that also plays into it, not including the hormones that are injected into certain, food products to make them grow faster, grow like, more beefier, grow more beefy, I guess, more robust is probably a better word. Your body wasn't meant to ingest that kind of shit either. So now you've got all these extra chemicals and, hormones and, God forbid you talk about plastics that are in like all of our water and being ingested by the fish that we eat, You got all this extra stuff bopping around in your system and your stomach's trying to find a way to digest it all. Then you add on to that, like we found out our water that we had here, I think we've mentioned this before, was like something ridiculous. I think it was like 5 times the normal level of chlorine that's needed to clean water for drinking. They were saying that basically it's you're drinking pool water. There's so much chlorine in your water that you're actually drinking pool water. Basically, it's actually more than what you would put in your normal like household pool. So you got that, other chemicals that are put in water and stuff. And then it's a miracle that anybody can eat anything at all ever. But then you go into like, well, what's the treatment programs then? They'll do like certain times they'll do medication therapy, like they give you the proton pump inhibitors, so your stomach doesn't produce as much acid, which, as we just learned, doesn't always work. It's a pretty low overall success rate for most cases. Like it's ridiculous. I think they said it's like 45% of people this is a long-term solution for. Most of the time it just ends up being like a stopgap measure. Like, great, that's awesome. And then you throw in with the mix, they can do ablations, which is another really fun thing that can happen, I think. I'm going to go and look into that, too, because part of this sounds spurious. Part of it sounds like, I don't know, it seems like some very draconian kind of treatment that they would do. Now, the most common uses for ablation are for what they call Barrett's esophagus. And just reading up on some of it, it sounds nightmarish. Essentially what it is, it's called like a radiothermal ablation, and it's fucking terrifying just to hear the sound of it. Radio frequency ablation. So essentially what they do is they use alternating electrodes to deliver like radio energy, essentially. It heats the lining of your gastrointestinal tract and destroys the bad tissue in there. Usually they say it's for like treating tumors or lesions or whatnot like that, but some applications have suggested it can be used to kind of like ablate the interior lining of the stomach where some of the some of the acid, the stomach acid is produced, so that those proton pumps don't work as they don't work because they're basically being burned out. Yeah, it sounds fucking nightmarish. And so like there's no real science necessarily, like as far as like developing a more, let's say, a less aggressive form of treatment. Like, hey, you know what might be cool is not burning the inside of people's bodies to regulate this shit. Because there's some risks that are associated with it that seem scary enough on their own. I mean, just think about it. It's essentially just somebody putting like two pads on the side of your stomach and just going clear, and they just light it up and then burn up some of that tissue in there. That's an oversimplification, to be 100% honest, but it's similar. I mean, it's a layman's terms, I guess, kind of way to approach it. But yeah, like we don't have any other, you know, curative therapies. We don't have any more of a holistic approach. God forbid we're going to clean up the food and water that we drink and eat and drink. But yeah, they're just like, we can burn you, or we can pump you full of more chemicals to help counteract the chemicals that are already in there. No fucking thanks, dude. I think I'll just stick with my Rise coffee and probiotics, and I just won't eat cheese or bread until the day I die, unless I bake it myself. Which I do have to say, I'm getting pretty good at baking my own gluten-free bread, if I have to say so myself. But we'll see how it goes. Speaking of, I just happen to have a cup of that coffee right here. Good. We're talking about foods and stuff like that. I heard somebody say this the other day, and I remember this being a thing. I was listening to another podcast. It's called The Danny Brown Show. Funny guy. Danny Brown is a rapper, and also, I wouldn't say comedian necessarily, because he doesn't define himself that way, but he's a very funny dude. And if you get a chance to check out the show, check it out. But he does this thing which he calls white people shit, and it's basically a thing where people on the show, or listeners to a show, write in and say, I've seen such and such do so and so, is this white people shit? And the one thing, I mean, it's a silly ass thing, but it's, you know, it's his bit. One of the things was having milk with dinner. And I mean, I'm sure it probably happened at some point in my life, just from just being around like all my other friends and family members and whatnot. I'm sure that at some point I was served milk with dinner. I just don't recall it being a thing, if that makes any sense. It wasn't like a tradition or like a routine that we did, you know, having milk with dinner. Milk with breakfast, sure, right? Even like a glass of milk with lunch, maybe. But milk with dinner, just, I don't really recall that ever being a thing for us. And one thing I did hear, though, is that people had milk with spaghetti. Now, I know that milk can help reduce, like, the inflammation that you can get when you eat spicy foods. There's a lot of times you see people eating like hot wings or really hot food. They'll sometimes have like a small glass of milk nearby because it actually will help cool your mouth down. Why you'd want to mix milk with spicy stuff, I cannot begin to imagine, but if it works, it works, right? But yeah, milk with spaghetti was always just that idea. I've seen people do it. Growing up, I knew kids whose parents were like this, and I'm like, yeah, that's fucking weird. Milk and spaghetti are two foods that I absolutely don't think go together. But did anybody else have anything like that? Some weird kind of thing that they would do? Or something that seemed normal when you were a kid, but then you grew older and you're like, yeah, why did we do that? You know? I think the only thing that was even kind of like that, and it was, there's a whole story about this if you ask my folks. The only thing that we kind of had like that was that you'd have to like finish your glass of water before you could have like a dessert, right? Or so I would, you know, it was really terrible when you'd go out to eat, right? One huge example was this place, and still kind of waking up, this place called Shoney's. I don't think they exist anymore, but it was like a family style sit down restaurant. Not quite buffet, but sort of. I think like if Golden Corral met Applebee's. So they had like table service, but they also had like a little bar where you could go get stuff and whatnot. And one of the things is they'd have like a great banana, like a banana pudding with Nilla wafers. And I loved that shit when I was a kid. And I wanted to get some, but I had to finish my water first. So I'm sitting there, I'm getting, you know, I'm getting close. I'm like, oh man, this water's about to be done. I finished my food. And then the lady would come by, the server would come by, here's some more water. And she'd pour another cup of water. I'm like, fuck. So I start drinking this water again, and then here's, I'm halfway through the glass. I'm almost getting 3/4 of the way through the glass. Here's some more water. I wanted to throw this fucking mug at her. After like that happened like 4 times, my mom was like, just go get some. Like, she's going to keep doing this. And it's funny for a minute, but you could tell like I'm getting, my little kid brain is like putting it together. And like, I'm going to literally pee on myself before I'm able to get any of this pudding, and it's bullshit. But yeah, there was just weird little stuff like that. It wasn't like wasn't as crazy, I think, as milk and spaghetti, but maybe I'm crazy for that. So I don't know. Are there any weird food combos that your family did or weird traditions surrounding mealtimes? You know, I don't know. Like, there's stuff that I might consider weird that you've, like I said, you consider normal, but you know, maybe through the lens of time, you know, looking back at your past going like, oh yeah. Why did we do that? I don't understand. There was really no reason for it. It's a bizarre one to me personally. Let's talk some news. And one of the biggest news stories, obviously, you know, with the presidential race heating up, the Democratic National Convention is going to be starting, I believe, today, if I'm not mistaken. Let me double check. I got a little wrong. It's actually this coming Monday, so we'll see what happens. But right now, for all intents and purposes, Kamala Harris is the presumptive nominee for the presidency, and Minnesota Governor Tim Walz is the presumptive vice presidential candidate for this ticket. And the energy surrounding them is no, I mean, you'd have to basically be living under a rock or somewhere where they didn't have electricity to not know how just overwhelmingly energetic this campaign has been since the announcement of Tim Walz being Kamala's vice president pick. The one of my favorite things that's been happening lately is just watching Tim Walz talk shit is amazing. Dude's good at it. He's a Midwestern guy, and he's got that same kind of like, you know, I give it right back to you kind of energy. I love the whole trending thing of big dad energy. Like, he does give off like the kind of like, yeah, like the really cool but down to earth, you know, like no bullshit kind of middle America of dad, right? Like, if imagine if like the dad from Leave It to Beaver actually would, you know, drink a beer in the garage with you every now and again. Just he screams no nonsense Americana, and it's great. Because he's willing to shoot, hey, he's willing to counterpunch as well as he gets hit. And it's been particularly amusing, like, again, all the little memes and stuff about, you know, Tim Walz says he's going to go ahead and turn this Democratic National Convention around if you kids don't settle down back there and stuff like that. Or Tim Walz isn't angry at J.D. Vance. He's just disappointed. Those are hilarious. But my favorite thing is just that he doesn't really do anything over the top, with the minor exception of telling J.D. Vance to probably get off the couch to come and debate him. But he just says that they're like the Republicans on the ticket, they're weird, and he's not wrong. The more people start to look at them and their behaviors and the way that they act, the way that they operate, they go, yeah, these dudes are fucking weird, man. I mean, just from all accounts, like everything you see coming out of the Republican side of this whole debacle is just bizarre. And it feels gross and wrong. If you've got any kind of reasonable, like if you've got any reasonable amount of decorum or concern for your fellow human, yeah, you got to look at them and go like, this can't be. Like, we can't do this, can we? Seems like they're trying. But one of my favorite things now has been watching the discord that's been sown just because they feel the heat. Like they feel the pressure of, you know, looking down the barrel of a really losing ticket in November, to the point where at one point somebody mentioned the fact that Tim Walz had referred to Republicans as weird as hell. And Donald Trump actually threw J.D. Vance under the bus and said, I think they're talking about not talking about me. They're talking about J.D. That's their thing about him, is that he's weird, and just kind of left him out to dry. And then, of course, Vance had to hear this and respond to it in an interview. And it's wonderful to watch him kind of waffle around. He goes, I just think that kind of unprofessional and, you know, untoward that they're resorting to name calling in this part of the presidential race. And I'm like, I had to chuckle at that myself. I'm like, my guy, you literally said that our nation is being taken over by single childless cat ladies who are miserable with their lives. That's a direct assault on a bunch of different people. Trump, we already know, he's used all the words except like two of the biggest to describe everybody that he doesn't like. You know what I mean? He's never short for an insult or a way to make fun of somebody or a way to speak to somebody outside of their name. It's the kind of thing where the way he talks to people just in the press and in like interviews and whatnot, the way he talks to and about people, if he said that, if he wasn't, you know, former President Donald Trump, if he was just Donnie Trump, you know, who worked down at the docks or something like that, somebody would knock his fucking teeth out long ago. You know, they're like, hey, I heard you talking shit about my girl Kamala. Bop! And he'd just catch a hot one in the bar. But yeah, because he's got Secret Service agents, you can't take a swing at this fat fuck. But yeah, he's literally one of the worst when it comes to just debasement and insults and name calling. And the fact that they're crying about the fact that they're getting called out for literally an objective criticism of how a human being should interact with the public and with other human, not even with the public, not even with the media, just with other human beings, right? And like, it is weird. They're weird, dude. That's like the best way to put it. They're bizarre. And I think it's funny to watch them squirm. It's funny to watch them be like, the mean people of the Democratic Party, they call me names. Oh, get off of it, you Mary. Put your shoulders up like Bill Burr would say. You know what I mean? Like, what are you crying for now? It was all well and good a couple of weeks ago when you were swinging Sleepy Joe all over the place, right? That was totally fine. You know, Kamala the Khan, that was totally fine. But now that you're literally just being called, like, now that you're literally just being described with an adjective, not given some quirky, weird nickname, not being called some string of insults outside of, you know, your actual disposition. No, just somebody goes, you're kind of weird. They'd be like somebody saying, like, you're kind of funny, or you're kind of smart, or whatever, you know, or you're kind of, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, just one word, like one word descriptor, an adjective. And they're like, my feelings are hurt. This is the party. These are the kind of manly men we're supposed to be looking up to if you're Republican. Get out of here, dude. It's just funny to watch them cry. I'm not going to lie. I'm here for it. And I will be sipping all the tea while it keeps happening, because Tim Walz doesn't seem like he's done at all. If anything, I think this dude is just getting started, and it's only going to be a matter of time before he straight up calls J.D. Vance a bitch. Like, it's not nice to think that, and I feel kind of salty about saying it even, but he's got the look, you know what I mean? Like, he's got the look, like, you know, he looks like the kind of dude who would roll his sleeves up before he started to punch you. And I'm like, oh shit, this guy means business. And I gotta tell you, I'm loving it. I'm totally here for it. All right, so we know that that's a thing now. I feel like it's a good sign to see some Democratic politicians, or just anybody who's not a MAGA Republican or like a hardline conservative, kind of give a little bit of clap back when it comes to being called out of their name or insulted for just being decent people, and you just call somebody up like, you're weird. And they're like, not me. Like, yeah, it's kind of weird to have that reaction, dude. Like, to get all squiggly and wormy when somebody makes fun of you and you're a grown ass dude. Like, I think I poked the soft underbelly part right there. You know what I mean? It's like, oh my God. It's like poking a frog with a match. They just flail out. I can't wait to see more of it. But yeah, it'll be a while. We'll have plenty more to talk about, I'm sure, in the upcoming weeks. And especially as we go into next week, like I had to correct myself there with the Democratic National Convention kicking off next Monday on the 19th. I'm pretty sure we're going to have a lot more stuff to talk about. So stick around, come back and check back in with me. And hopefully you guys will have some opinions. Again, stop by patreon.com/wanderingonestudios. And write me and let me know what you think. Let me hear your opinions and, questions, comments, whatever. You know, speaking of Patreon, let's dig into some of the things I mentioned I was going to say regarding Patreon, because I want to still produce a podcast for that. It's kind of hard to just dredge up bullshit topics. I can make up stuff all day long, but it's kind of interesting to come across those kinds of things organically. So if you guys write in, it definitely helps. And I would love to read your stuff online, on the air, I guess, essentially. But there's a couple of things that I read recently, and I was just looking around at like different types of food. Cause I mean, I love to cook. And one of the things I like to do is experiment with certain types of food. At one point I tried using, tried finding like pork belly to make like, almost like a Korean style hot pot kind of thing, like a Korean barbecue thing. Only issue is that I don't have one of those cool little tables with the gas burner in the middle of it, which would be dope to cook the shit on. But I was watching a lot of these cooking shows on Netflix, and one of my favorite things is I love getting ideas for making different types of food, right? You get the same, you kind of get into a rut occasionally when you know, especially if you have like digestive issues like myself, you get into a rut of eating like the same kind of thing over and over again because you know it's not going to irritate your stomach, but it doesn't excite your palate, right? So I was thinking about what other kinds of food I would like to try. And sometimes I just find a recipe and I'll just cook that, just see if I can make it as good as or close to whatever or whomever made it before. And it got me thinking about how many, ooh, goodness, man, really? How many different types of cuisine I actually have yet to try. And I've been around the country. I haven't traveled outside of the U.S. at all, really. The exception of once when I was a child. I mean, I barely remember that. So I've been wanting to go travel around a little bit more, experience some different cultures and whatnot. It's just, you know, obviously with the pandemic and time and money and whatnot, it's just not necessarily feasible. But when you can, it's nice to go and check out some different cultures, food when you're in the area and you're like, oh, that's different. Let's try that. Recently, a restaurant opened up down the street from us, and it's weird that it's opened where it did, but it's kind of cool that it is because now I can just go get this anytime I want. And it's an Indian restaurant. And now, a long, long time ago, I dated an Indian gal, and she was always bringing over like different types of food. I guess my family in a lot of ways is not as adventurous, I guess, or at least they weren't back then, not as adventurous when it comes to trying new stuff. And I know a lot of people get into their own ruts and they just don't want to do anything different. And that bothers me. It bores me and it makes me feel like I'm wasting my time here. You know what I mean? Like, if we're just going to do the same two things we always do, we're only eat the same three things we always eat. It's like, what the fuck am I doing? You know, that always bored me. And it made you just like, you get like this like burning in your blood. Like, I want to try anything new just as long as it's not this shit over and over again. So about like a month or so ago, I ordered from this restaurant and they had like a curried, I think it was a curried goat over like basmati rice and, you know, they had actually a gluten-free garlic naan, and the naan's like a flatbread kind of thing. And I got that, and I was like, this is delicious. And it made me think, what other cultures' foods have I not tried that I would really like to try? And I've had like a bunch of different types of food, and it's just thinking there's got to be something on the list that I haven't really dug into. And one of the things I thought of was Ethiopian food. I haven't really had a lot of Ethiopian food ever. I've had a lot of other different types of food, but Ethiopian is definitely one I missed. Just African food in general, you know, just to try some different African style cuisines. And I don't know that there's many places for that here in the city. And I would like to definitely try them and, you know, get a taste of that, what that's like. That was one great thing about living in Chicago, by the way. They have this festival every year called the Taste of Chicago during the summer. It was a great way to go and get to try a bunch of world cuisine that you might not otherwise have access to. I loved that. And you could just bounce around from booth to booth to booth. As long as you had the money for it, you could get a taste of everything, really. And it was wonderful. So I thought, yeah, Ethiopian food or African food in general, but Ethiopian in specific, in particular, because I've heard it about how incredibly like flavorful and exotic it is, just because it's combinations of ingredients that you wouldn't think would go together well, but go together quite fabulously. So I've always been curious about trying that. Also, in like some of the more obscure cultures too, that like you hear about, but you don't really see their food represented in the world, I'd love to try Mongolian cuisine. Now, you know, you get like a little taste of that sometimes when you go to like an Americanized Chinese restaurant, but that's, you know, again, it's the Americanized version. It's kind of zhuzhed up a little bit for, you know, the American wild palate, but like I'd love to try some of their like traditional Mongolian cuisine would be just an interesting thing to try at the very least. Yeah, so that was another one. And then like, I mean, I think it's just because of the different people I dated over the years, but I've had like Polish cuisine, I've had obviously like Thai and Chinese, Japanese, Korean, Indian, of course. I would probably try like, I've had like some Russian foods and stuff like that. Probably that'd be one I would probably try a little bit more. Yeah. And then, you know, some of the, like South American, more South American style dishes, you know what I mean? Just, you know, Uruguayan, Argentinian, you know, Brazilian food. Like, I'd just love to get some more of that into my life as well. I wonder if anybody else has one that they're like, oh, I recommend this and I would recommend this dish to try. You know what I mean? That would be amazing to get a hold of something like that. So that was one of the questions I came across. It would be the kind of thing I would ask, you know, would answer on the Patreon episode or whatever. And then one I saw was not for my channel, but it was a kind of thing that made me think, oh yeah, I would definitely say something like this, or somebody would ask me this, right? And the question was like, if you had to find a way to pack up and leave and to get the F out of Dodge, like right away, and you're like, you can't fly because, you know, let's say it's like a post-apocalyptic kind of thing in a way, you know what I mean? Like normal radio communications are down, so flying would be nearly impossible because everything would have to be visual referenced flights, you know what I mean? Or visual flight, I think it's like visual flight records or visual flight reading. But basically one means you have to see what you're flying into, and the other one is instruments, so it means you got to trust in your computers and, you know, radiography and all the other jazz to get you through where you're going. Instrument ratings are incredibly hard to get from what I understand. And I'm like, yeah, let's say you just can't fly because you can't tell when another plane's going to come barreling out of this cloud bank at 500 miles an hour and you just hit right above, you know, a populated area or something. So you got to use traditional wheeled vehicular transport. What would be your ultimate get up and go vehicle? And I actually had an answer for this. It wasn't my question. It wasn't a question that was posed to me, but I've had an answer for this for a while. And it's basically all come from this one company. It's really crazy to think that somebody's thought of this, but it's true, and it was awesome to look at. And this company is called MAN, M-A-N. If you go to man.eu, there's a great website there. Trucks for all kinds of different things. But one of the ones I was looking at, they kind of come like all as one big path. I mean, they I don't know how to put this. So they start off with like a fairly similar looking body, but then the options that you can stack on to the different models are insane. So the one that I was looking at first was one called the Armadillo Conquistador. And this thing is just like a six-wheeled beast. It looks like the kind of vehicle that, you know, you would put like metal bars on the windows and spikes on the front. It's like a Mad Max style vehicle. These road eating tires. I believe the thing gets something insane. It's like something like, I think it's 1500 miles to a full tank. I mean, you could fill this thing up. I mean, it's going to cost you a couple grand to fill it up, but you could fill this thing up and practically drive it for like 2-3 days straight without stopping. And they have off-road vehicles that have some pretty insane capabilities as well. The other one was the MD56C Man TGS 6x6. This thing was also another road eater. And the more I've seen pictures of them, I'll see if I can put some links into the description so you can get an idea. I'll link the website for them for sure. But man, it was incredible to look at. Like some of the stuff that they had was just like, how do you get away with making this crazy vehicle? And you can't really buy a lot of this stuff just like conventionally. Some of them are just like, you know, these are trucks, these are vans, then they have like off-road stuff. And yeah, the more you look around, the more you're like, this is definitely what I would want. There we go. Okay, that's not man, that's something else. But yeah, I've been looking at them for a long time. And I was like, these are insane. Like everyone needs one of these. If you're going to try to get off the grid and you want to be like, you know, just, I need to be out. Some of these are just insane. Let's see what the other one was. This one, the Unicat Individual Expedition Vehicle. That one was a pretty gnarly one too. But I think the man vehicles were just like the more, gosh, what's the word? They just looked a little bit more rugged, solid, and just feature rich. Like, I was like, this is crazy. The fact that it's a thing that exists. I believe this is one of the websites I saw too. It's a Tread magazine. They're expensive as hell though. Let's just put it this way. If you're going to get one of these, it's going to be like, it's going to be the cost of a house, but you're going to live in it. Because it is fully kitted out. I think the craziest part about it is the base cost is somewhere in like the $600,000 range. You won't be able to get most of these like in the States. I think they're only really available in Europe. But I mean, if you're able to afford to build one, you'll probably afford to have it shipped to the United States too. Because they're insane. I will find pictures to the vehicles themselves. This one by Tread magazine might be the best one because it has like a bunch of different photographs of what the customization options look like. So you can get an idea of the exterior of the vehicle and what's on the inside. And the more you get to look at them, the more you're like, dude, I'm not sure what unconscionable shit I would do to get a hold of this, but I'm not thinking it's too much. I'm not thinking it's too weird that this would happen. I mean, this could very well be like, hey man, you sold out for what? That. And I can live in it and I can go wherever I want and I never have to see anybody who knows me ever again. So I don't have to answer for what I did. But yeah, once you get a peek at it, you'll be like, yeah, I think I get it. Yeah. So yeah, that was another one of the questions that I saw. I'm like, these are the kinds of things I would talk about on a Patreon episode. There was another advice question that was in there, and I was like, this one seems a little bit too specific, not to anybody that I know, but it seemed like it was tailored towards this particular individual situation so much so that I didn't find a way that I could rewrite it or reword it in a way that I felt comfortable answering, just sight unseen. So who knows? If you've got something like that that you'd like to talk to me about, I would be more than happy to listen to it. So again, patreon.com/wanderingonestudios, free trial, or you can sign up for $3 a month. Boom, done. And with that, we're going to wrap it up with one of the most bizarre stories I think that's come out of this past week, and especially out of the Olympics. So some of you may have heard that there was like a lot of wonderful stories that came out of the Olympics. Come from behind victories, upsets, there's some great stuff that's happened. There's two stories in particular I like to talk about. One hasn't gotten nearly enough attention, and the other one's gotten way too much attention personally. We'll talk about the one that's gotten way too much attention, and I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. We're talking about the 2024 Olympics breakdancing competition, and wow. So, I don't know anybody who can offhand name the winners for the breakdancing event in the Olympics this year. I think we can all name the biggest loser for this year, and that is a 36-year-old Australian breakdancer who goes by the name Ray Gunn, which is short for her actual name, Rachel Gunn. If you haven't seen the memes, I don't know what to tell you about it, other than you just gotta watch it. It's so hilariously bad that it actually feels offensive, and I'll dig into that a little bit later on. But there was there's a lot of hubbub surrounding this woman, and rightfully so, not the least of which is her comically atrocious breakdancing routine. The other thing is that there's video that's out near the closing ceremonies of the Olympics where she competed, got 0 points for her entire performance, and was basically like laughed out. And then at the end, though, she actually does some semblance of breakdancing that looks a mile better than what she put on during the actual competition. She had 3 battles, lost all 3, got 0 points, and like I said, has become something of a meme / laughing stock, and also in a little bit of a national embarrassment for Australia. A lot of people, I can't say everyone, but a lot of people were watching the competition and went to social media to kind of go, ooh, no, this shouldn't have happened. Which is obviously what you'd want to say if somebody went out there and basically did their version of a Stewart song, look what I can do, and just rolled around on the floor kicking their legs. It's like watching a little kid saying they made a new dance move, and they're just flopping around on the floor. You're like, yeah, that's great, honey, get up. You're going to ruin your school clothes. And she just went for it. And it's been the worst part about it, I think, is that she's just wholly unapologetic about how stupid she looked and how tone deaf and off the mark her entire being was just being at the Olympics. Apparently her husband was also her breakdancing coach. And it kind of like introduced her to the idea of breakdancing back in the early to mid 2000s, where she was supposedly training and learning how to actually breakdance. And like I said, there's some video that surfaced that shows that like she can actually move. So whatever she was doing was completely a choice. It wasn't that she had like a spasm or something like that. It wasn't she had like a bad performance. No, she went out there and intentionally wanted to do what she did. And she has supposedly been coached by her husband, which is great because he also needs to get his ass whooped for that shit. But then here's the other interesting thing. She's been touted as a professor. A professor of, she's not, I guess professor is probably a little bit too strict. She's a lecturer from Sydney, Australia. She has a PhD in cultural studies and is touted as an interdisciplinary researcher interested in the cultural politics of breakdancing. She also says that she has a PhD in cultural studies and a bachelor in contemporary music. And look, for someone who says that they are, for someone who puts themselves forward as a lecturer and essentially as like a doctor, has like a doctoral degree in cultural studies, this might have been the most culturally tone-deaf thing I think I've seen in a while. That includes seeing the Prime Minister of Canada dressed up in blackface. This literally felt not like a cultural appropriation, but a cultural parody. Like, it was like she was making fun of breakdancing with what she did. And of course, like, her defenders are going to say, like, oh no, she was trying to do something creative. And, you know, breakdancing is it's a form of expression. And this is her way of expressing, like, her culture as an Australian. Like, look, come on. There's been plenty of breakdancers from Australia, I'm sure. I don't think any one of them's done a kangaroo hop and then basically a curly style around the world, just rolling around on the floor, which is what she did. She looked like a jackass. She made a mockery of breakdancing and the culture of breakdancing, and by extension, hip hop music and black culture as well. That's my personal take on the thing. You know what I mean? It'd be almost funny if she doesn't act so fucking serious about it. Like, she's so convinced that what she was out there just doing big shit that she won't listen to the criticism. Like, hey man, you know what you did? You just basically made a mockery of an entire culture. And to a certain degree, by extension, the people who helped create that culture. And she's like, nuh-uh. And everybody's like, okay, yeah, fine. I'm like, nah, fuck that, dude. You couldn't get away with that shit with me. She would have to have some serious conversation with me before I could let her slide with that shit. Everything I saw was basically a mockery of, you know, the activity of breakdancing and of hip-hop culture as just in particular. And I think that the crazier thing about it now is that there have been petitions that have been put out actively calling for not only for her to be, like, stripped of any, you know, basically have her name scrubbed from the record in a way, but also saying that she and her husband colluded to manipulate the selection process for the Olympics. Now, the part that I'm about to tell you has not been verified as yet. I've still been looking for sources to find out if there's any real truth behind these allegations at this point. They are specifically and purely just allegations. However, the allegations seem to come from some pretty irate sources who are claiming that Gunn and her husband set up, and also another lady named Anna Mears, who I believe was functioning as like a part of the governing body for the breakdancing finals that were being held. Her actual role in this is still a little unclear. Personally, I've been trying to find out more information about this Anna Mears person. But there's a petition that's going around on change.org saying to hold Ray Gunn, Rachel Gunn, and Anna Mears accountable for unethical conduct Olympic selection. It's claiming that she had set up, they set up their own governing body to kind of steer the qualifying tournaments towards Gunn. So that she could set up her own tournament, basically, and gatekeep other competitors from being able to stop her. And then it also alleged that her husband was the coach of the Australian breakdancing team for the Olympics, which, I mean, there's probably an easy way to verify that. But these are, like I said, these are just allegations. There's no actual proof just yet as to the veracity of these, but it's interesting to think that, like, why would you go so hard in the paint? You know what I mean? Why would you go so hard in the paint to set up a foundation to judge the breakdancing competition, then work even harder to make sure that nobody else could get in but you, and then go all the way to the Olympics to do that? And I'm of two minds of this. Let's just say, for the sake of argument, let's say that the allegations are true. She, her husband, and this Anna Mears lady all colluded together to try to make sure she would get to the Olympics in Paris and do exactly what she sought out to do, right? Which was flop around on the floor like a rave goer being tasered by the police. If she did it just to get up there and I want all eyes on me, right? Why not do a great job? Why not do the best job you could possibly do? There's other video of you dancing and you were actually fairly decent. I mean, I wouldn't say you were the greatest I'd ever seen, but you were better than I could probably do. I'm 10 years older than you, but I mean, I couldn't have probably done half of those moves when I was 36. But even still, it's not great, but it would have been better than what you did. So if you were going to work all this stuff up to rig it so that you could be the only one to go, why wouldn't you do a great job? And then two, if you were going to work all this stuff up just so you could lampoon the entire sport and make an ass of yourself on international television, by the way, why not own that? Why not say, yeah, I did it all for the fuckery. I didn't give a shit about winning it all. I just wanted to go up there and make an ass of myself. It's what you did. So, I mean, at least it would be honest. But not that either. Okay. So, I mean, it makes me wonder if these allegations are true, to what end? And if they're not true, that even makes it wilder that you... If you didn't set it up to basically suit you and your needs and your ends, why even go? Like, if you weren't getting anything out of this at all, nothing was going to really, it was not going to benefit you in any reasonable, logical, or, you know, palatable way, right? Why even bother? Why? I mean, obviously now she's getting, like, buzz because she was being such a buffoon out there. But, I mean, a lot of, like, there's been some other comments, and I'll find some articles too, but there was a couple comments that were like, she's going to basically be radioactive. One, obviously, there's one that, she didn't deserve the hate. The fuck she didn't. I seen the dance, man. I seen the dance, and yeah, she deserved every bit of the shade she's getting right now. It's some bullshit. I would be mad if I was Australian right now. I would be super hot about this. And it's just, it's crazy. Like, one of the things was, she's going to get, obviously there's going to be viral marketers or whatnot that are probably going to link to her or want to get a hold of her. But for what? You know what I mean? If it wasn't for the fact that you were just out there to be weird, why wouldn't you at least, like, I mean, if you're going to do it, might as well get some money out of it, I guess. And there's one thing, too, where, like, you could see that she could move, even if she couldn't really, quote-unquote, break dance. She could at least move. Somebody says her reputation in Australia isn't that great, but she is famous across the world. I don't think everyone else in other countries is conscious of how Australians feel about her. I think Australian marketers would be avoiding her for that reason, but there will be somebody in this country who'll go for it. She'll get international offers from sports shoe brands like Adidas or Puma, food companies like McDonald's or KFC, electric cars, she'll get a phone company or something like that, but there'll be other international companies who will want her as well. Those are remarks that are coming from marketing expert Max Markson. It's crazy to think that she's actually going to get money out of that fucking foolishness. But I would say as an American, a lot of our entertainment is built on buffoonery. So I guess if this is going to be the thing, I mean, she just cued into a very American ideal that you can make a jackass of yourself. Literally, we had a show called Jackass, where people would do incredibly insane, incredibly stupid, incredibly risky things for no money, really, just for the fuck of it, and then they got rich. So, yeah, she really tapped into that jackass gene, and, I mean, I guess... it wouldn't be the way I'd want to be known. Let's just put it that way. And she should be ashamed of herself, but she's not. And I really, you shouldn't really want to wish ill on somebody just because you don't like what they've done. But I hope she catches all kinds of hell for this. I said, if for nothing else, then for the almost cartoonish demeanor that she represented on the floor and the chaotic and discordant dance moves, I'm putting air quotes up, that she exhibited during the Olympics, a place that's supposed to celebrate excellence in sport and athleticism. You went out there and acted a complete and total ass. I think that really bugs me more than anything else. It's to the point where the IOC, the International Olympic Committee, has decided to remove breakdancing from the 2028 Olympics. That would have been held here in the States, I believe. So yeah, they're like, no, we're not doing this shit again. Thanks. You effectively torpedoed an entire sport from being included. And here's the thing I'll say too. This is going to go out on a limb. Some people might not like this, but I don't think breakdancing should be at the Olympics. I think it's an incredible art form. It's an incredible way of expressing oneself. And the athleticism and the skill that it takes to be great at it are definitely to be respected and elevated. Not at the Olympics, though. I think the Olympics is just the... It's not the the preeminent venue for artistic expression. Also, I don't think rhythmic gymnastics should be in the Olympics either. I really don't. Synchronized swimming, I get that to more of a degree than anything else because the amount of sheer athleticism it takes to be able to do those formations, hold your breath, swim in concert with one another, that's almost like, I mean, it's the physical equivalent of flying as a blue angel. You know what I mean? It's that kind of skill and it's skill, artistry, and athleticism all rolled into one. Now, I'm not saying that those other sports don't have that, but to the impressive degree of being able to hold your breath underwater for 2.5-3 minutes, I don't think so. Plus, I think that breakdancing is better represented in more of a social context than a sport context. You know what I mean? I feel like it actually... The sport progresses, or not the sport, but the art form progresses more when it's being used as a means of expression and you know, a cultural identity or a cultural expressing cultural ideals than it is for gold medals. You know, I don't think it really fits there. And so while it's sad to see it get taken out in such an unceremonious manner because of the actions of, and not saying she's the only reason, saying she's the only reason, by the actions of a single individual, I think it's probably for the best. Maybe if for no other reason than that somebody else won't act an ass like this again and do this exact same thing in 4 more years. You know, spend 4 years of taxpayer, like, you know, if it's taxpayer funds that go into funding initiatives to help train Olympic athletes, great. You know what I mean? That's good. But then if you spend anybody's money, whether it's taxpayer, private individual, private investment firm, and you spend their money to go out there and act like that, I think they deserve to break your fucking legs. That's how I feel about it. Maybe you feel differently. You can let me know on Patreon and holler at me and let me know what you think there. But yeah, I think she should be incredibly embarrassed and ashamed of herself. And in the feel-good section, as we're getting ready to rock this out, I'm going to close this with a feel-good story from the Olympics that I saw, and I think it's a great message for just anybody. No matter what you do, no matter what walk of life you're from, this is a message of perseverance and grace under fire. By the time this podcast reaches your ears, this is already old news, but at the same time, the way it shook out was one of the things that I found to be most impressive. In the Olympic basketball finals, the United States men's team went up against the French national team, and they got them. They shot them down, which was great. Also, it's kind of to be expected, but when you consider that the United States, you know, the NBA actually pulls ballers from all around the world, from all, you know, countries on the globe, yeah, it doesn't really surprise me that there could be a team like that that would stack up against the NBA, which I would love to see an actual world championship that happened every year because the NBA finals are dope, but I can only imagine USA having to play for the right to be world champions against the rest of the world every year. That said, it was cool that the USA men's team won, but the real story, in my personal opinion, the real story was the USA women's basketball finals against France. And I was fortunate enough to be able to catch it like right after halftime or right before halftime. and watching the ladies team literally battle it out on the floor against the French national team was a sight to behold. And it spoke to the perseverance of these athletes. Now, not only were the French players playing some kind of dirty ball, grabbing jerseys, trying to trip people, trying to fake, trying to punt the ball out of bounds, but then just blame it, like just enough of a tap on an American player to give them the ball back. That was one thing. The refs had to have been like partially blind. Maybe dollar signs were blinding them. I'm just going to say that because you know that, you know, corruption in sport is not uncommon. But yeah, some severely overblown calls, some completely overlooked calls, and then just a weird kind of, like, it felt like maybe the refs were all from France and just wanted to see France win, but they knew that they didn't have the chops to actually beat the USA on the paint, so they're trying to take them out with, you know, bad calls and penalties. They couldn't beat them on the whole court, so they were trying to beat them behind the foul line. And that was a mistake, because while the French girls were pretty damn good at shooting, the Americans were just better that time around. And they were smoking them. And it was crazy to watch them just like, oh, this was not even a foul. If anything, the French team fouled the American team, and the French ref would be like, foul America. And you're like, what the fuck? It was absolutely... Go watch, I challenge you all to go and watch the last half of the USA women's basketball final in the Olympics. You'll see a bunch of calls in there that will make you mad. If you know anything about sports at all, especially about basketball, you'll see a bunch of calls that you're like, what the fuck? Who would even call that? Or why didn't you call that? And it came down to a shootout right to the very end in which Team USA beat France, walked off with the gold medal, and I laughed my fucking nuts off watching those French girls cry on the court. I'm like, that's what you get. Y'all play dirty. You know what I mean? These refs are trying to feed calls to France any which way they could. Y'all got fucked because you cheated. You were cheating. You were definitely playing dirty ball right here. And America's like, nah, go ahead. They were mad. You could tell the ladies of the U.S. team were pissed the fuck off. The coach was just like, hey, how do you shut them up? Put them on the court. Put the points on the board. Beat them with the ball. Let's go. And those ladies went out there and they handled a fucking business. And big props to Team USA. Thank you so much for showing what it looks like to show perseverance, dedication, and grace under fire. There were so many times you could see them ball their fists up like, ooh, I'll punch this bitch in her head right now. And I'm like, girl, if you did it, I wouldn't even be mad at you. I wouldn't even be mad at you. I'd be like, oh, that's not in the Olympic spirit. Nah, I don't know. I don't know if you remember. Back in the old Olympics, motherfuckers would die. If you had pushed me down on the ground like that shit, I'd have to do you. I'd have to get a folding chair from the stands and beat your ass with it. So good on them for keeping their composure and keeping their shit together over there. And walking home with the gold medal, it's got to feel great. Go Team USA. I appreciate the tenacity, and I appreciate the athleticism that you showed. And also, thank you for showing that, you know, that hard work and effort and dedication, perseverance, that can pay off. Y'all did great. I'm proud of you as an American and as a human for just being good people. And like I said, not falling to your baser natures, because Lord knows I'd probably try to hit a motherfucker with a brick. That shit was making me mad. It was making me so mad. My wife was in the other room. I'm yelling at the TV. I had to close the bedroom door. So I'm like, I was just yelling at the TV and then cackling like an idiot when they lost. And they were out there on the field crying, on the court crying. I was like, aha, that's what you get. So, yeah, I don't feel sorry about that at all. If you hear this and you're in France, hey, man, tell your people to stop fucking around. Play better ball. Sucks to suck. All right. Go USA. With that, we're going to wrap up this episode of the Wandering One podcast. Thank you all so much for joining me today. If you hear this and it's actually Wednesday, this is going to be around noon, hopefully, when this actually hits your your earballs and the airwaves. So feel free to pop on in later this afternoon.
usually between 3 and 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And then on Saturdays, we're going to shoot for 1 o'clock in the afternoon at twitch.tv/linkib. That's L-I-N-K-I-B-E. We'll be playing video games with the friends and the homies. Doing a lot of RPGs. So today, I'm going to take a little bit of time now that I've got most of my other house stuff done and the podcast is finally in the can, and just play a little Destiny with some friends. And then this afternoon, when I start my stream, we're going to go back to Baldur's Gate. And I just managed to make it into like the first portion of what they call Act 2. And right now I'm at this particular spot where there's going to be a very insane battle that's about to take place. And I'm curious to see how this shakes out when it all is said and done. So yeah, I hope you guys will join me there as well. And again, please check out the Patreon, patreon.com/wanderingonestudios. If you like the podcast, feel free to rate it wherever you see it, comment whenever you can, share it with whomever you'd like to, and come on back for the next one. I appreciate you guys. I love you. Thank you for all the birthday love as well. And I'll see you guys further on down the road. Peace.